Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rami Makhlouf.
You don't want to overreact. You know, you want to keep perspective.
Nah, screw that. Hit the music, Rob. Hit the music. Let's go.
Let's go. Fit the man for a gold jacket.
For those who don't like our people, that's tough. We like them.
And Hub Arkish.
The key is making the playoffs. I think if they do it at 10-7, I will be a little disappointed because I think they're more talented than that. I think that's the thing. This is a rare occasion. I've been doing this for 45 years now. And I can't remember a time where I thought that the fan base may be underreacting a little more than overreacting.
Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish, live and local on 670 The Score.
Yes, sir. Live from the Hyundai Score Studios and brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I am Rami Makhlouf alongside Hub Arkish. Hub, how are you this evening, sir?
I am doing good. How are you?
Good. You have a little something caught in your throat there to start the show up?
No, I started talking without checking to make sure my microphone was on.
I've done that myself. And we're with you until 9 o'clock in a jam-packed show. Obviously, a lot of Bears talk on a football Friday here on The Score and with Hub Arkish in studio. Derek Klassen, one half of the Athletic Football Show. He'll be here coming up at 6:20. Christopher Price, 20th season on the Patriots beat for the Boston Globe. He'll show us this Bears-Patriots matchup from the other side of things. And we'll talk with our buddy Herb Howard from It's the Bigs and the Herb and Two podcast coming up at 8 o'clock. He covers the Bears for those guys over there. But I wanted to start off this evening talking about the game this Sunday. And Hub, it's funny. I remember we were doing a show together a few weeks ago now, and it was before the Carolina game. And you and I both agreed going into that game, given what had transpired leading to that game, that it was a must win. And here we see it again. I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks later, and I don't know about you, but I would also characterize this game on Sunday a must-win, Hub.
Well, yeah, this is absolutely a must-win for a number of reasons, but the main one is that if they are serious about having a trip to the playoffs this year, there are only so many what we call winnable games left on the schedule, and
right.
This is absolutely one of them. And they've already let one or two of those get away, and they can't let another one get away. So there's no question about that. The other thing that you have to realize, though, is that when they were 4-2 a couple of weeks ago, everybody was pretty excited about where things were going, even though we knew what schedule they had played. We knew who they had played. We also knew how badly they had beaten or well they had beaten those two teams in those last two wins. And so you just have to go to tomorrow, or Sunday, I should say, knowing that the Bears are the better of these two teams, that we haven't seen the Bears team every week these first however many weeks of the season, and which team we're going to see Sunday, you know, we're not going to know until it kicks off.
Yeah, and looking at the playoff picture, Hub, the Bears, most people know this listening to me right now, but they're 4-4. They sit just outside the playoff picture. If it was to start today, the Packers have the 7th seed at 6-3, and it's a big bunch of teams around the Bears battling to try and get back into the picture. You got the Rams at 4-4, the 49ers at 4-4, the Buccaneers are 4-5, Seattle is 4-5. The Packers and the Seahawks, they're on a bye this week. The 49ers and Buccaneers, they will face each other, so that'll obviously have an impact on what the playoff picture looks like at the end of the week. And the Rams have a very winnable one on Monday night against the Dolphins. So one of those two teams in terms of the 49ers or the Buccaneers is coming out with the win. It looks like the Rams could come out with the win, and the Packers and the Seahawks just sitting back and watching Week 10 action in the NFL. So it's going to be hard to really make ground with this win. I think it's a must win from a standing standpoint, Hub, just to sort of keep pace with the other teams that are around you here. And like you said, the second half of the schedule doesn't get any easier in terms of what you would term winnable games on the schedule. But I think the other side of this thing, Hub, and you alluded to this as well, is there's I don't know if you'd call this an intangible, but the morale around this team. You're in the building on a daily basis and talking to these guys, so you would know what the morale and the mood and the vibe is like in the building better than I would. I'm speaking from the outside as a fan. From a morale standpoint, it's as low as it's been this year, given what's happened the last couple weeks, and given the way that this offense and Caleb Williams has looked, which to me is the most important thing about this Bears season. I said the other day, Hub, I don't think I should have to choose between developing a quarterback and winning football games. I think that the Bears should be able to do both. But if I have to choose one, it's developing a franchise quarterback and a high-powered offense. And that is not happening right now. And from a morale standpoint, honestly, Hub, it's a lot like the playoff picture. Beating the Patriots isn't going to do a lot to make me feel better, but it'll at least keep me like in place where I'm at as far as my hope and my morale around this football team at this point. Like, it is a must win, but I don't know from a team morale, vibes, mood standpoint. And again, you can tell me what's going on in the building. I don't even know what a win does for that other than to just sort of keep things in place as far as hope and expectations and not going backwards about this football team.
Well, you know, right now, Rami, we're the exact middle of the season. There is no way we can predict who the 14 playoff teams are going to be and not going to be. We know who a few of them are. We know who a few of them aren't. But for the most part, there's at least, you know, 20 to 25 teams still very much with a chance to be in the playoff hunt. And so making too much of any one game this weekend is nuts. Now, looking at what's going on with the Bears after the last couple of weeks, they need a win just to get back to where they were a week and a half or two ago. Not back to 4-2, but back to where they're at. But you just said something kind of interesting. You said, I know that the morale is, I don't know if you said down, but you said it wasn't great. The reason that I go to Alice Hall almost every day of the week is that to keep up with where the players are at, where the coaches are at, what they're saying and thinking, how they're feeling. I'm not seeing any problem in the Bears players or coaches' morale at all right now. And that's from being there a couple hours ago and, you know, pretty much every day of the week. That's fans where there's a morale problem. It's not with the team. Now, you worry that there will be a morale problem with the team. And I know that you should be worried because of what's happened the last couple of weeks. Things could go south pretty fast, but they haven't yet. I haven't seen anything this week to suggest, oh, they're done. You know, they don't trust the coaches. All these things that are being suggested, mainly by fans and social media, but somewhat by some media that isn't doing a great job in reporting this, it's just not true. You know, they're the same team that they were 2 weeks ago at 4-2, and they haven't played well the last couple of weeks. What I'm more concerned about is that Caleb Williams, until two games ago, had three really good weeks in a row. He appeared to suddenly be taking off and going in the right direction. The last 2 weeks, he hasn't played as well again. Now, I'm not real thrilled about where they're at coaching-wise on the offensive side with Shane Waldron. I just don't know what they've got there. You know, but at the end of the day, the reason that this game is so big this weekend is, well, there's two reasons. Number one, 10-7 is going to get at least a couple teams into the playoffs. That's a given. Yep. They've got to get to 10 wins if they have any serious playoff hopes. This is a game they have to win if they're going to get to 10 wins, or maybe even 11 or 12. That's one of the reasons that it is so important. But the bigger reason is that, you know, as bad as they've been on the road and with all kinds of other things, they've won 8 straight at home. They definitely have a big advantage at home. They especially have a big advantage at home over bad teams. If they lose this game, this one could end the season with a loss. I mean, this could be one that they can't recover from. On the other hand, if they play a good game and play well, like they were playing 2 weeks ago, they could be right back in the playoff chase at 5-4. And so that's why this game is so huge this weekend. It's just to get the season restarted for them in the right way this week. It's not about where they're going to definitely end up, or not definitely, but hopefully end up in 7 or 8 weeks.
And you're right about that. So you're saying that this could be from, again, so I don't want to keep hammering the term morale, and maybe there's a better word for it. Maybe the word is belief in what they're building there and the direction that this thing is headed as a team. You think this week could be like a tipping point from that standpoint, Hub?
Oh, it definitely could be. I mean, if they lose, I would suggest that pretty much knocks them out of the playoff chase. And then it's just about developing the younger players. And hopefully next year, the fourth year of the rebuild, or third year, whichever years you want to count, is the one that gets it done. Now, if they win, a lot of things could happen, you know, and most of them would be positive, you know. And I'm not going to wait, you know, 3 more hours. I mean, I think they're going to win because they're the better team and they're at home. And we know how well they've played at home. But if they lose, you know, a loss here would be far more devastating than the last two. And with these concerns now about the possibility that maybe some of these players are losing focus, like maybe there are some people who aren't buying in anymore. If that's true, and then they get beat this week by the Patriots, then there's going to be a lot more guys not buying in, and then you've got a much bigger problem.
312-644-6767. Is this a must-win, and what does a win do for you as a fan, or what do you think it does for the Bears? 312-644-6767. Give us a call or shoot us a text. Rami Makhlouf, along with Hub Arkish, will be joined by Derek Klassen of the Athletic Football Show coming up at about 6:20. So, Hub, I don't know how much you've talked about this already on the station. If you have, I haven't heard it, and I'm assuming a lot of other people haven't heard it. If there isn't any cracks in the foundation.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In terms of the belief or the morale of this football team, what did you make of all the public chatter around this team after the Hail Mary against Washington a couple of weeks ago?
Well, first of all, Rami, I don't usually make much of anything about all the public chatter because, you know, it's fans acting like fans, and I'm not criticizing them. I'm not saying they're wrong or they're right, but to pretend, you know, that they should be complaining about decisions made by the head coach or play calling or things like that, when there isn't a fan out there who knows half what the members of this coaching staff and this front office know. You know, it's not worth spending too much time on. I think that what you have to do is listen to what fans are saying, listen to what they're concerned about, support it if from my advantage of being, you know, there every day and being around these guys and knowing a lot of these guys, if that helps me straighten out some things for them that they're assuming, which I know not to be true, then that's fine. On the flip side of it, you know, if there are concerns that are real negative and not enough is being done about them, you know, then I think you have to agree with fans on that and say, yeah, those are problems that have to be fixed. And here's a couple things that I've heard from people on the coaching staff or players on the team as to how they might suggest it could be fixed. I don't know. But again, we have to remember right here at the midpoint of the season, it's a 1 week season. And all it's about this week is that there was some significant hope that maybe the Bears could make a run to the playoffs this year until a week or two ago. If they win again this week, that hope remains alive. If they don't, I think it pretty much dies. And that's what makes this game so important.
So the players questioning the decision making or the play calling publicly in the media, not a sign of cracks in the foundation to you? That's just something that pops up every once in a while, especially when things aren't going great for a football team?
Well, Rami, that's the problem I have. I haven't heard a single player question, you know, the play calling or the decision making. You know, they're asked questions. They try and answer them as safely as they can, you know, without getting in trouble with their coaches or their GM or without upsetting the fans. But at the end of the day, I haven't heard, and I've been there, you know, as much as anybody, I haven't heard a single player, you know, criticize a decision that one of the coaches made or something that they didn't do. They might not have agreed with them. That's very different from criticizing, you know, what their coaches are doing. But I don't know a successful organization where you hear any players publicly criticizing the coaching staff, you know, and they're not being a negative impact from that. And I'm not seeing any of that with the Bears right now either.
312-644-6767. Must win for the Bears in your eyes? And what does it do if they do win? 312-644-6767. Check out some of those texts in a minute, but let's go out to Markham and check in with Aaron. You're on the Score with Rami and Hub. What's up, Aaron?
Good evening, fellas. Hub, you're stealing my thunder, man, because you're reading my mind. I was telling your producer, it's the last 2 weeks in a row, if we're really going to be honest about it, it's been bad quarterback play from a rookie quarterback that we all knew was going to be a rookie quarterback. And, you know, I called in a million times and said, hey, if we win 9 games, I'm happy. You know, I don't know why everybody wants to go 10-7 talking to, he's a rookie. We're going to win some games that we wasn't supposed to, and we're going to lose some that we should have won. And, you know, be happy with that because it's better than what last year's was. You know, he's a rookie quarterback, run the football. Let's deal with that. And, you know, I think we got a guy. Be happy that we have a guy and stop putting in this, players are, you know, rebelling against the coaching staff, because I haven't heard that. Y'all ask a question, they give them an answer, and that's it. And
no, I'm not playing the game of it's better than it was last year. I need it to be much better than it was last year. We were sold a bill of goods that this was a team that was ready to win. And I, again, I don't feel like I should have to choose between developing a quarterback and winning games. I think they should be able to do both. But if I have to choose one, give me developing a franchise quarterback. That'll have a more long-lasting positive impact on this franchise. And honestly, while yes, the record is better than it was a year ago, I just came across this while we were waiting to go on the air, Hub. 2023 Bears with Justin Fields and Luke Getsy running the offense. 171 points scored, 321 yards per game, 149 first downs. 2024 Bears with Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams, 172 points scored, 294 yards per game, and 149 first downs. It's not better. And Caleb Williams, I don't know. I was asking this question the other night on this very show, Hub, and maybe a question to pose to you. I don't know if Caleb Williams is actually developing as an NFL quarterback, and that's not a knock on Caleb Williams. I think it's more about the situation he's been placed in with Shane Waldron and this offensive line he's playing behind. I don't know if he's developing as a quarterback or if at this point more damage, more harm is being done than good as far as his development with an offensive line he doesn't trust, with maybe some play calling that he doesn't agree with or doesn't trust. So I'm not going to sit back and accept that this is better than it was last year, because A, 4-4 and is not something to write home about, and B, the most important thing, developing a quarterback in a high-powered offense, is simply not happening right now.
Well, Robbie, we can't agree on everything, and we're not going to agree on this one because I don't think there's any doubt or any question that the Bears are a better team now than they were a year ago. They started 0-4 last year, and they were 4-2 a week and a half ago. I don't know how you can say they're not a better team. They are a better team than they were a year ago. They are making progress. They're just not making it as fast and quickly enough to satisfy the fans and a number of members of the media. You know, and what's more frustrating than that is that while they're definitely better than they were a year ago, we don't know how much better, and we don't know if it's good enough or if it's what even we expected from them, let alone what other people expected from them at this point in the season. So I think that's where a lot of this frustration is coming from, is everybody is trying to make this out, not everybody, but a lot of people are trying to make this out as so much worse than it is right now. You can't make it better than it is right now after what's gone on the last week and a half or two after the 4-2 start. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure who is really evaluating what's actually happening, what should have been expected to happen through 7 weeks or 8 weeks, and where they're at right now.
And I'm not saying they're not better. I acknowledge they are better. It's just, it's not good enough. And the line I keep going back to, Hub, is I don't expect this to be a finished product by now. I don't expect Caleb Williams to look like a franchise quarterback by week 10 of the season, but I expect it to look better than it does right now. They should be further along in the progress and development than what they are right now. And the further we go into the season, the more that becomes true and becomes the case. And the gap between where they should be and where they are grows in my eyes. We got to hit a quick break.
Just one real quick question before we go, though, Ronnie.
Yeah, go ahead, Hub.
Was it good enough at 4-2?
I still had questions because of who those two games were against. And honestly, those were the only two complete offensive games they put together. I wasn't impressed with what I saw against the Rams. They got the running game going. Caleb Williams' numbers at the end of that day were efficient but pedestrian.
Okay, just was curious what you were going to say about that.
Derek Klassen, one half of the Athletic Football Show, will be our guest right after a short break. That's Hub Arkish. I'm Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show, and we're back in a few minutes.
I think for Caleb, every week is going to be a new set of circumstances that he's dealing with, different defensive structures, different blitz patterns, all the things that play out. And so for him, each week, you know, just continue to work playing clean eyes, clean feet, playing fast in the pocket right there. And it's something that, looking through all the different young quarterbacks, there have been some ups and downs as the process has taken place. And the thing that gives me all the confidence in the world in Caleb is his dedication to his craft, the way he comes into work every single day. And so we'll keep working and coaching him and the guys surrounding him, working their butts off to get this thing going and get it going in a consistent manner.
There's Shane Waldron talking about the development of his quarterback and the offense. I'm Rami Makhlouf along with Hub Arkish on a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. Check out It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. We still have the text line open if you want to jump in on what Hub and I were just talking about before the break. 312-644-6767. But joining us now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois, one half of the Athletic Football Show. Always a pleasure to welcome Derek Klassen. And Derek, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing great today. How are you guys?
Good. You heard from Shane Waldron right there and talking about the steps in development for Caleb Williams. What have you made of Shane Waldron's play calling as it pertains to the success or putting Caleb Williams in position to succeed over the course of this season?
I mean, I think the conversation there is a little tricky because I think if you look at some of the other rookie quarterbacks and really just rookie quarterbacks in general, you typically see offenses like pare things down a little bit for them, especially like early in the year. Last year, we saw a lot of with C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans just doing a lot of the basic Shanahan staples to kind of ease C.J. Stroud into things. You saw a lot of that with Jaden Daniels in Washington. I think they're doing a really good job of kind of just getting guys in motion, giving him a lot of easy first reads, you know, not making him read out these like full 4- and 5-man progressions. Whereas in Chicago, they're really asking Caleb Williams to be like a veteran style passer. Like you're seeing them run a lot of the intermediate and deeper concepts that you would expect to see guys like Justin Herbert and Dak Prescott and like those type of, you know, true real deal veteran pocket passers handle. So I think they're putting a lot on him. And I think it's one of those things where it's probably going to make things bumpier early on because obviously you're just throwing a bunch at him. But I also think it's kind of nice to have those reps and kind of jump into the deep end a little bit almost immediately.
me, please, because, and what you're talking about obviously couldn't be more important, but what I'm most curious about is just your evaluation of how Williams, how he himself has played these first nine games. I mean, the bottom line, you know, he hasn't been terrible. He's had a couple good games. He's had a couple bad games. But overall, how would you rank the first half of his rookie season as the Bears try to develop a franchise quarterback?
I think it's been fine. I think it's easy to lose perspective and get frustrated because of some of the ups and downs when we've seen a handful of other rookie quarterbacks in recent memory, obviously CJ Stroud last year, Jaden Daniels this year. And you forget that most rookie quarterbacks are going to have ups and downs. And I think Caleb Williams certainly has. I've been mostly impressed by his ability to move around the pocket. And there are one or two instances where he's probably almost too willing to hold on to the ball and like too willing to hang in the pocket. Whereas I think there's almost, you know, I think coming into the league, I was worried he would be bailing pockets too early. It's almost kind of the opposite where he's like trying to prove himself that he can hang in the pocket. And again, I think it's one of those things where like he's almost throwing himself in the deep end in that sense. And so you're going to get a lot of negative plays of him trying to understand what is going to work for him. But I do still like that he is trying to do all that stuff. And I think you see some really impressive moments of what he can handle pre-snap, what he can do in terms of moving and shifting guys around. And then some of his ability to make decisions. The one thing I do think that is pretty easily the worst part of his game right now is just the ball placement, you know, particularly down the field. He's obviously been really bad past 20 yards this year, but even in the, you know, 11 to 20 range, 1 to 10 range, he still has one or two misfires a game that are just kind of uncharacteristic for what he was at USC. So I think once that starts to come along a little bit, we'll see a little bit better, cleaner production.
And I was just going to ask you about that, talking with Derek Klassen, one half of the Athletic Football Show, because you're right, over 20 yards, but really his accuracy overall is near the bottom of the league, no matter what metric you want to look at. A lot of theories about that. Is it a bad offensive line and he's got happy feet, he's seeing ghosts? Is it just rookie mistakes and growing pains? Is it a disconnect with his receivers and he's throwing it where he thinks they're going to be and they're going somewhere else? And it's probably a combination of all three of those things, Derek. But what's your theory as to why a guy who came into the league as a very accurate quarterback is one of the least accurate quarterbacks in the league to this point?
You know, I think, you know, the receiver miscommunication is certainly part of it. I remember against Washington, you know, they're trying to run one of those like to Keenan Allen where they're trying to run him up the sideline and he's supposed to stop kind of near the sticks and he runs maybe a yard or two deeper than Caleb is thinking he's going to run, so they're off there. There's another one in that game where Rome Odunze is supposed to run a slot fade up the right sideline. He's supposed to get outside leverage. He kind of plays it too far inside, and so Caleb misses him there. So there's certainly some stuff there, which is just some rookie miscommunication, but also just anytime you get any quarterback and wide receiver that are put together in a new spot, you're going to have some of that stuff. But I also do think that Caleb is just kind of missing in a way that he didn't at USC. I think at USC, he just got really comfortable in that offense and understood the timing of it all. And then, like I said, now in Chicago, he's really kind of been thrown into the deep end for what they're asking him to be as an NFL passer. So I think kind of like you mentioned, sometimes he gets happy feet. Sometimes he speeds himself up a little bit too much. And I just think it's going to be one of those things where he just needs reps, needs to see it slow down a little bit, and some of the accuracy will start to come.
You know, one of the things that I haven't really heard anybody talking about so far this season is neither DJ Moore or Keenan Allen have played like DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. And you don't know how much of that is because they're trying to develop the rookie quarterback, or are they both having off years? We know that Allen, you know, had been hurt for a couple of games. We know that Moore has gotten knocked down a few times. He hasn't missed any time. But, you know, what was supposed to be the greatest strength in developing Williams isn't working out. These two guys aren't producing. Is that on them, or is that on Williams, or is it on both?
I think it's a little bit of everything. The DJ Moore case is a little bit more curious to me. I don't know if I can pinpoint as much why that connection is not working out. I will say, I think with Keenan Allen, at this stage in his career, he should be like almost a glorified tight end power slot type where you're really just working him over the middle of the field, 1 to 10 yard areas. But it seems like they're using him a little bit more outside the numbers than they probably should. They're using him deeper down the field than they probably should. So I think to me, that's just Keenan Allen is kind of being miscast in this offense. And I don't know that that's necessarily Caleb's or Keenan's fault. I think that that might be more like a play calling and kind of structural issue than it is on either of those players. So again, I don't know what the deal is with DJ Moore, but to me, that's kind of the issue with Allen right now.
while we're on the subject of guys in the passing game not being used the way that they should be, how do you explain Derek Klassen of the Athletic Football Show, a 6'5 tight end with very good pass catching ability, seeing one target over the course of two games like Cole Kmet has?
I truly don't understand it, because if you just watch the film and you watch even some of what they were doing earlier in the season, this I think is the best that Cole Kmet has ever played. I think when they paid him, I felt maybe it was a little bit of an overpay, but I really think he's actually kind of stepping into those shoes now and really playing to that level of player. And so for Shane Waldron to struggle so much to use him and understand how to get him open, maybe even just on some of their boot stuff where you just get him kind of on that little flat route, like, they've just got to find better ways to get him open. Because like you said, he is, it's kind of funny to say that he feels like a little bit one of their most explosive guys outside of DJ Moore. But I think at this stage, with the way that things are constructed, it certainly seems that way. So it's baffling to me they can't get him going more.
There is some good news for the Bears. It seems pretty obvious to me that right now, Rome Odunze is the best of those three receivers on the team.
I think he is. The more they throw at Rome Odunze, the happier I'm going to be. And there's going to be some of those rookie growing pains that we mentioned earlier, right? Like that slot fade against Washington where him and Caleb just aren't on the same page. That stuff is going to happen with any rookie connection. But I just think you watch Rome Odunze. His route running for a guy his size, he's obviously over 6 foot, over 200 pounds. So he's got a good frame for it. I think he's smoother with the ball in his hands than people probably realize for a guy who's his size. I just think it's going to be one of the things where I think by the end of the season, we're going to get to a point where we look back at September, we look back at October and be like, why weren't they throwing at him more than they have? And I think we're starting to see why they probably should be.
On the other side of the football, Derek, what looked like and people, well, the Bears themselves, the players and folks like us talked about this possibly being a top five defense, starting to show some cracks in the last couple of weeks, and especially in the run game, which that opens things up for the opponent in the passing game. Now, they have had some injuries. Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon, Montez Sweat didn't play last week. How concerned would you be about the downward turn that this defense has taken the last couple of weeks? How much of it do you chalk up to maybe some of those injuries being a problem?
I think a lot of it is injuries. And that is kind of the thing, though, is this is not a defense that does a lot of complex things. It's a lot of set it and forget it. We're going to play our zone coverage. We're going to rush for as much as we can. And so it's a very players-based defense in that way. You're not really trying to trick quarterbacks, so you kind of do need your guys healthy. And so I think that's been a big part of it. I think specifically in the run game against Arizona, Arizona's a really good running team. Like they have been all for a majority of this season, and obviously you can add Kyler Murray as the quarterback element of it. And so I think when you are missing Montez Sweat, who is, you know, very clearly your best defensive end, and then Kyler Gordon, who, you know, he's a nickel, he's a slot defender, but he's actually a really, really good run defender for that position. I think missing those two guys specifically in that particular matchup against Arizona, it was really just like a bad break. So I'm not too worried about it yet. I would probably give it one or two more weeks before I start to hit the panic button on that.
I got to take you back to the offense one more time and ask you another question. Shane Waldron wasn't fired. The head coach quit or was fired. And so the whole staff was gone, and that was how he became available. How was Shane Waldron evaluated for his work in Seattle? I mean, what did they think of him as a defensive coordinator until they decided to change the whole staff?
My take on Shane Waldron kind of coming into the season was that I think there's very obviously in terms of play callers, like a top, you know, eight or nine guys who are a very obvious plus for your team. And then to me, I think Waldron kind of fell into the bucket after that, where it's like, all right, this guy isn't necessarily hurting your offense in the way that, you know, we've seen guys like, I don't know if you remember like the Jason Garrett New York Giants offense, like it's like stuff like that, where they're clearly hurting your offense, or even Mike McCarthy now, I think in Dallas. I don't think he was in that tier, but I think he was in kind of one of just the middle of the pack tiers where he kind of wasn't giving you a whole lot of value, but he wasn't really hurting you. And I think right now we have a Chicago roster that has such a bad offensive line. I think he has not shown that he has enough of the tools to kind of come up with the creative answers and overcome that sort of problem. Obviously, it's a really hard problem to overcome, but I just don't think he's quite in that tier of play caller right now.
Real quick follow-up then, and I have to ask you, were you surprised when they hired him then? Because they knew that they had the number one pick in the draft. They knew they were taking a quarterback, and he was their pick. Did that surprise you?
I would have liked something a little bit more ambitious. That's for sure. I understand why they maybe wanted to just go get a guy who's done it before and maybe didn't want to go for a new play caller. They wanted to have a guy who just had like a pretty stock standard NFL offense for the most part. Like he kind of does a lot of the, he's off of the McVay tree. So he kind of does like a watered down version of that. So I understand why they wanted a guy who had already called plays for a rookie quarterback. But like I said, I would have liked something a smidgen more ambitious than what they went for.
Ambitious is the nicest way you can put that, Derek. I appreciate you doing that. Over here. Talking with Derek Klatz in one half of the Athletic Football Show here on the Score Evening Show. All right, let's look at Sunday's game. Another rookie quarterback on the other side in Drake May. What do you see in this game that maybe Bears fans should be worried about? What do you see in this game that Bears fans should feel pretty good about?
I mean, they should feel pretty good that the Patriots don't really have that many good offensive players outside of the rookie quarterback, who is, for as much as I like Drake May, I think he's a really good player. He's also liable to do some boneheaded things. And so I think with as good as the Bears defense has been for a majority of the season, I do think there is a decent chance that they could kind of get after him there. But I'm just really excited about this game in general. I mean, these two prospects I thought were some of the most special players that we've seen at the position in a really long time. And obviously Caleb's last 2 weeks haven't been great, but I think he's shown some really good flashes. And I think Drake May, pretty much since he stepped into the lineup, has shown some really good flashes. I mean, that game tying touchdown he throws against the Titans, where he's running around for like 12 seconds and eventually finds his guys in the end zone. I mean, it's just, these are the two type of dudes that can make a play like that for you. So I'm hoping we get some sort of ending like that in this game.
Prediction?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would still say Bears. I don't know about the score, but I would still say Bears. The Patriots, their defense is significantly worse than it was certainly last year, and they're missing a couple of their best guys. And then again, I think the Bears defense is kind of just going to be able to put a lid on the Patriots for the most part. So I would still take Bears here.
That is Derek Klassen. Check out the Athletic Football Show at theathletic.com and find him on Twitter at QBClass. Derek, really appreciate the time and the insight, my man. Let's talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Take care.
And he joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. I thought that was very nice of him to say he would have liked to see something more ambitious than the hire of Shane Waldron. That's a really nice way to put it. That's awfully nice of him. And I would have liked to see something more ambitious as well. I don't know what you were saying at the time of the hire, Hub, but I would have liked to see something more ambitious as well.
I was surprised by the hire and a little disappointed in the hire because ambitious is a good word. Better is a good word, too.
That's another way to put it. Yes, you know, that is another way to put it.
Of the three or four guys that I was thinking at the time might be good hires, he wasn't one of them. Now, when they hired him, I didn't say it was a bad hire, and I'm still not ready to say it's a bad hire. It's been bad so far, these first 8 weeks. But at the end of the day, a lot of our listeners have heard me doing this for over 40 years now, and mm-hmm. I just will not make decisions too quickly until we know that we think we know for a fact. I'm not going to say somebody's really good or somebody's really bad. I think that he has made more mistakes than things he's impressed me with, but he's done a little bit of both. And I think the next really 2-3 weeks are pretty much going to dictate how long his future is with Chicago.
Speaking of the fact you've been doing this for over 40 years, Hub, there was something that was talked about earlier today on the Score that I wanted to get your thoughts on, given your time around this organization. There's a common thread among some major players throughout the Bears organization, and I'm wondering if that's something we should be giving the side eye to. We should be a little concerned about. We'll talk about that next. I'm Rami Makhlouf. That's Hub Arkish. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
With you until 9 here on The Score Evening Show, we'll catch up with Christopher Price, 20 seasons on the Patriots beat for the Boston Globe. We'll get his thoughts on this Sunday's Bears and Patriots matchup. Join Coach Dave Wanstead and Mark Grody live at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan for the Four Winds Football Forecast this Monday. The event is free to the public and starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Central. Wani will be giving a mid-season review and forecast for the rest of the season. Plus, you can get an autograph and photo with Coach Wanstead before the Monday night game. That's Monday at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan. I'm Rami. That's Hub. And Hub, earlier today on the midday show, I heard Harrison and Rahimi talking about something that I did not know until they brought it up today. You probably knew this, knowing the inner workings of the Chicago Bears, but that Trace Armstrong, former Chicago Bears offensive lineman, now NFL agent, he represents Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, Shane Waldron, and represented Luke Getsy. How, I guess my question to you, again, as somebody who's been around this team and doing this for over 40 years, how unusual is that to have that kind of common thread of the same agent throughout kind of the brain trust of an NFL franchise?
Well, it's not unusual at all. I mean, you know, the bottom line, and you're talking not only about an agent, but an ex pretty good NFL player who is now an agent. And, you know, coaches, if they're looking for information about other coaches, who might we expect them to trust more than their own agent, you know, who is representing some of these guys? So I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying there's nothing unusual at all about it. And I'm not sure that the fact that they are, you know, his clients is the reason that Ryan and Matt hired these guys, you know. So without more knowledge, I can't say what went into that process, but I can say it's not that unusual, you know, for coaches to share the same agents.
I guess the concern I might have, Hub, hearing that, and again, I don't know if it's a problem or not. That's basically why I'm bringing it to you. But a question it might raise for me is this going to lead to sort of, I don't know, groupthink or some kind of echo chamber that you're going to the same guy over and over again for his opinion or his recommendation rather than maybe looking outside the bubble and seeing what other people think about what would be a good or a bad hire for a given position?
You know, Rami, I think that obviously either Ryan or Matt or both liked these guys before they talked to their agents, you know. I mean, I don't think they just went to their agent and they said, who do you think we should get? And just took his word for it. You know, they are the ones who are going to either keep or lose their jobs because of those hires. And so they made those decisions. I think that it's just kind of a coincidence that they all, you know, are being being represented, I should say, you know, by the same guy. But I don't think I'd build too much more into it than that. I think that if Matt or Ryan didn't really like them as hires, you know, for coordinators, I don't think they would have made them, or I would hope they wouldn't have. And again, this is another one of those things that we don't have all the facts, but we're assuming there's a problem here because it's not working out. And so it must be wrong. But we don't know, you know, what that relationship really meant to them being hired. I can only tell you that it's not that unusual.
Yeah, and I didn't want to approach it from a standpoint of I think it's a problem. I don't know if it's a problem. It raises questions as to how it might be a problem, and maybe one of the things at the root of why this thing hasn't moved as quickly in the direction that I and others would like to see it move. I don't know that it is, but like I said, it raises that question. We just got a couple minutes here left in this segment, short segment, and then we'll be talking with our guy from Boston to get a view on this game from the other side of things. I asked Eric Klassen this before the break about this defense. Now 29th in yards per carry. They lost their best run defender on the line with Andrew Billings going down with a torn pec this week. He'll have surgery, maybe out for the season. Matt Eberflus didn't necessarily rule him out for the season. If this defense starts to show some cracks, Hub, and with what we've seen with the offense and what we see on the schedule in the second half, this thing could really fall apart really quick. How concerned are you with the defense? And same question I asked Derek, how much of this do you think is injuries, and how much of this do you think is maybe the league catching on and figuring out what the Bears are trying to do?
Well, actually, I think it's just one bad game. And again, this has kind of been the theme this first, you know, hour is you look at last week, they were bad in Arizona. The whole team was bad in Arizona. But what about the week before? A 15-14 loss to the number two offense in the league? That's what that was. You know, that's not the defense coming apart. The defense actually played pretty well. The offense didn't play well, and Caleb didn't play well until the fourth quarter. And getting back to Caleb, and he did enough to win that game in the fourth quarter, you know, and then he'd be a hero again. So it still, to me, keeps coming back to people wanting to get final answers from things that are either, you know, positive or negative, but are clearly not complete yet. And that's why, you know, my thoughts on the defense. I never quite figured out how they were playing as well as they were until 2 weeks and a week ago, you know, when at least the numbers didn't go as well. They did give up 500 yards against Washington, and that really surprised me. I didn't see that one coming at all. But again, you know, they held them to, what, 15 points or 17 points? It wasn't a bad game, you know. And so we need to see now a couple more weeks to know if we should worry about the defense. I'm not worried yet because they did have a bad game last week, but nobody showed up last week. So, yep. You know, I want to see if it happens again this week and next week. Well, it happens this week against a bad New England team. It would be really disturbing. But until we see one or two more games like last week, I'm not going to overreact to it.
That's Hub Arkish. I'm Rami Makhlouf. We got to hit a quick break. On the other side, 20 seasons on the beat for the Patriots, for the Boston Globe. Christopher Price will join us to talk about this matchup from the other side of things. That's coming up next. Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670. The Score.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.